talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. Is on today, the Exchange Club.
And we're back on this Getaway Friday, Friday, January the 6th, 2023, first Friday in the year. 2023, first Friday in the month of January, 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Having a great conversation this hour with Catherine Davison. She is somebody who knows a lot about skilled nursing facilities, works at one, and just for clarification, for all of you who listened to Charlie Evers for many years, she is his granddaughter. So definitely a lot of connections to this station here, and it's great to have her on. You know, the one thing I do want to talk about with Charlie before we get back to this is, and we were talking about it before we went on the air, he always had his grandkids on, and you were the only one, I think, who never made it as a guest.
Yeah.
Just... It's busy times.
Yeah. I stayed, you know, living in Galena. And, you know, being a granddaughter, I didn't have that close-knit relationship that some of the other grandkids did. Or, I'm a high school girl, like topics, you know.
Well, a different age.
Different age.
Yeah. But you did call in to the show, right?
I think I did a couple times. Actually, during a chemistry, my freshman year of college. Yeah.
Well, let me just ask you, for the people out there who would want to know, what kind of grandpa was Charlie?
He was a popular one. Yeah. You know, growing up, I had my grandma and Grandpa Hutchinson that lived down the road that were mainly farmers. And then I had, which I was super close with them. I'm still close with my grandma. And then I had my Grandma Jeannie, which obviously is Grandpa Charlie's wife, who was always calm and collective and quiet, which I love Grandma to death. She has everything. She's got her life together. She's always just calm and happy. And then there's Grandpa Charlie, who I would be like, well, my grandpa's on the radio. You know, what's your grandpa do? I would always, you know, being a little bratty kid, I would throw that in their face. Or the big thing is like, I'd be like, you know about Groundhog Day? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, my grandpa had something to do with Groundhog Day. You know, I was little. I didn't know what Groundhog Day was, but I knew he had something big to do with it. But to be honest, I did not know how truly famous, I would say famous, he was until I saw him on the front of the Columbus Dispatch when he passed. And to this day, you know, residents, because we get a lot of residents from, like, Grady, I'll be like, oh, you know, you ever been to Marion? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you know, Charlie Evers. And a lot of times they'd call him Chuck Evers. And I'd be like, that's my grandpa. Well, then all of a sudden I was the favorite person at the facility. And then they would talk about him to, like, all the other people. And they'll be like, who's your grandpa, you know? But yeah, no, I just always knew he was busy, busy, busy 24/7, and he was on the radio all the time.
You know, and it's very interesting because a lot of people are on the radio.
Yeah.
A lot of people are on the radio, but few are a star. He was a star.
Yeah.
You don't end up on the Columbus Dispatch when you pass away.
Yeah.
If you're just on the radio.
Yeah. And we would go out to, like, Mexican for, like, my mom's birthday or something, and I thought it was the funniest thing ever because, again, like I said, he was pretty much quiet all the time. Like, he'd have conversations with us at home. But like I said, you know, and I am the same way, I will talk your ear off all day long, but when I get home, I'm done for the day. The funniest thing, though, would be seeing my grandpa drink. I grew up, my parents didn't drink. And then you'd see, you know, my grandpa drink. And one time we went to Pennsylvania, I think I was like 9 or 10, and he was drinking. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, like, he's old and he's drinking. Is he going to get drunk? You know, I sat across the table and he would just sit there and enjoy his beer or whatever he was having. I just thought it was the funniest thing ever because we didn't grow up around alcohol.
Well, it's, you know, our listeners know that very well with Charlie. Not that I don't think he drank a lot.
Nope.
But on Christmas Eve, we would always have the eggnog that was spiked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the air, we would do this. And Charlie certainly had a good time that day, as did the rest of us.
Yeah, I would always just think it was so funny. I'd be like, he's going to get in trouble, you know?
We all had a great time with him. But, and the Buckeye Chuck, it's coming up here in a month.
Yeah.
And Chuck of Buckeye Chuck is Charlie.
Yeah.
So to be named, or to have that named after you.
Now it's nice because I'll be like, you know about Groundhog Day. Like, actually yesterday there's a resident. I said, do you know who Buckeye Chuck is? And she was like, Charlie Evers. And I was like, that was my grandpa, you know? And it's fun, you know, because it's like everybody still remembers him, but it's nice being able to be like, yeah, he was my grandpa.
He'll never be forgotten.
Yeah.
No, he's one of those people. Now, how did you get in this field?
So, I've always wanted to become a nurse, and in order to become a nurse, you have to have your state-tested nurse's assistant certificate. So, I took my course, and then I didn't do anything with it, because like everybody else, even though I grew up in a nursing home, I just was like, I don't think I want to do that, you know? I get really attached to people, especially older people, very easily. So, it wasn't until Grandpa Charlie went on hospice and he needed help. Not till the end, you know, when I was going up there, I was like, I can do this, you know.
Really? That was the moment?
That was the moment. I was like, I can help people.
That's interesting.
It was weird. And I think it was, so he passed in May, actually on my husband's birthday. So then we got married in September. And after that, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go work at a nursing home. And I did it. So yeah, I think it was, you know, you take your tests in front of like the state people to get it. But you're working on mannequins. So if I'm being completely honest, Grandpa Charlie was like my first patient other than like clinicals that, you know, at that time, because I was new, I didn't know how to pull him up in bed by myself, you know, but I was struggling and I did it. Now I know how to do all that stuff. But I think that was what gave me the push. So I was like, I can do this, you know. And I worked as an SCNA for 2.5 years, and I thought, you know, I got accepted into RN school and did it 2 weeks, and realized, you know, I think blood pressure medicines, they all end in O-L-O-L, but that's all I got out of it. With having two boys and just building a house, I was like, there's no way I can go to nursing school, work. Race 2 Maverick was, he wasn't even one yet, you know. And then I decided that I wanted to stay in the nursing field, but I liked admissions. I like to get to know the families. So now I get to tour people, you know, get to know them, what their wants and needs are, and then their family members. My favorite thing is when I'm touring people, and then because we have to review. We just don't accept anyone and everyone. They're telling me about their mom, you know, she's X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, the paper saying she's X, Y, and Z. Well, when she gets in there, she's A, B, C. She's not X, Y, Z. You know, she's not what they said. And it's like, it's crazy because, you know, you get to know them, but then you really, truly get to know their loved one. But you still get to create a relationship with all of them. And that's my favorite thing to do now, you know.
Now, being young, obviously in your 20s, what would you like to do? Or do you think you're where you want to be?
I think I'm where I want to be. So I thought I wanted to become an administrator of a building. I probably have the best administrator there is out there. I am super lucky to have Stacy, but man, she's a whiz. She knows literally everything. And like, there's stuff, you know, there's codes administrators have to know. They have to go to school to become an administrator, obviously. Some of the stuff she says, just random codes that blabble off her tongue, I'm like, how does she know that? You know, I'm like, there's no way. You know, she is like the principal. She's more than a principal. I mean, administrators, that's a tough job to have. And I've realized that I don't want to do that. I think I like being able to say, hey, this is true about our facility. And you can rely on me to trust me and them come in there. And I get texts probably once a week of families because I give out my personal number because I want them to make sure that they can trust me. You know, they'll shoot me a text like, hey, you know, I appreciate you having us come here. Like, we've never been happier. We've never seen our mom happier. This nurse is awesome. This STNA is awesome. You know, that's like I love getting those texts or phone calls because I feel like, you know, I accomplished something good. I helped someone. So, yeah, no, I think I'm right where I want to be at.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
I've always wanted to be a nurse.
The same thing.
Yeah. My dad and mom owned a garbage company, and then they owned a recycling company. And I loved dispatching. I loved roll-off trucks. I love everything about that. But my husband and his dad run a business, and I just don't, you know, I thought, you know, I always wanted to run my dad's business. And I was like, you know, that's a lot. Now I get to play with money that's not mine because I market too. So I get to spend money all the time, which, you know, if you're a girl and guys, you like to spend money. But I get to spend money and have fun while spending the money to market, you know, do stuff for our residents. But, yeah, I just always wanted to be a nurse. But I'm good at talking, and when I believe in something, I put it out there. And marketing, you know, it's not always truthful. But when it's a facility and, you know, it's not just selling a hair product, you have to be truthful. You have to say, you know, I give tours. We're fully staffed. We're one of the only, fully staffed facilities around. But there's always going to be call-offs. You know, I always say that. I'm like, you know, we're fully staffed, but there's going to be call-offs. And you know that. I'm not going to lie to you. So it's a position that, you know, I still get to, and I get to call hospitals, you know. I get to check in, see, you know, how far out are they? Are they on their way? So it's some, you know, it's not dispatching, but it's a little bit of, you know.
Communication.
I like that. I like the adrenaline, waiting to see, you know. I give tours, and families don't always, they'll go to four or five places that accept their loved one's insurance, as if they should. But I will sit there and tap my pencil like a crazy person and wait to see if I'm choice and our facility's choice. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, someone must have chose Country View because Catherine is at it again because I'm just, you know, running around all happy and smiling, getting the room all ready. So I think, you know, nursing is just, that's a very tough field to be in. So I still get to read referrals, see what's wrong with them. Still get some type of nursing involved in it, but, you know, I like my position.
Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like your job?
A 12.
Really?
I tell my husband every day, I say, it's stressful, you know, especially when someone has to stay, like, long-term instead of short-term, you know, and then it's like you have to sell their house. That's awful. Or you lose a patient, or if your census is low, which, you know, we have to be I'm a 99-bed facility, so I have to stay at 90 or above. You know, and people die in threes, and let's say you're 93 and people die in, you know, three short. That part's stressful, but yeah, I tell my husband every night, I'm like, I love my job.
Now, is it work? Would you call it work?
I don't call it work at this point. So, you know, there's always gonna be stressful days, but I have fun at my job.
What has your job taught you?
That's a big question to ask. Communication for one. For two, we don't accept all insurances. People will come in and take tours and fall in love with the place, and then we can't accept them. And it's having to just, you know, make that phone call. Like, I know you want this facility, or if their meds are too high, but we can't take you. It's heart-wrenching. You don't know. You know, obviously they're going to be upset. Yeah. That's probably my biggest thing that has taught me, like, you have to just, you know, flat out tell them the truth. I don't know how you would express it. Like, get the nerve, yeah, to make that phone call. I've always been a people pleaser. I'm still a people pleaser. Like the banana split. You know, I went and got Louise a banana split because that's what she wanted. You really have to learn how to put your foot down, because if not, people will walk all over you.
How do you learn that for somebody, as you say, who is a people pleaser?
You get worn out. I've gotten worn out so many times that you just feel done. And so the first time you put your foot down, you know, someone's not happy for you, but you know you're making the right decision. You put your foot down, you feel so much better. So,
you know, as you were saying to the caller before we went to break there, she was talking about people having advocates.
Yep.
But you mentioned there, which is true, there are people who have nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, 9 out of 10 times they have guardians. You're not going to see those guardians. People who work in nursing homes, they don't work in nursing homes for the money, because you and I both know hospitals are where they pay the most. The people who work in nursing homes, they work there because they have a heart of gold. It's not because of money. There's not one resident I can't think of at our place that doesn't have an advocate for them that works there. You never want someone to, even if they're not in their right mind, you know, it's so frustrating. People say, you know, they don't know what you're talking about. They do. And if they don't know right then, they're going to find out, you know. You never want someone to feel like they're being left out.
Well, I think that's a tough thing, you know, because you want to encompass everybody in what you're doing.
We have residents who, you know, they don't even open their eyes. They can't walk, nothing, but we still bring them out for the entertainers. We still bring them out for craft time, you know. We still feed them, you know, we're not going to just leave them.
You know, so many illnesses right now do have to do with the brain.
Yeah.
Dementia, Alzheimer's, even Parkinson's to a certain degree can affect your brain. How do you deal with people who they don't know what they're doing, and you know they don't know, they wouldn't be talking to you like that, they wouldn't be acting that way.
You just, you know, you learn, like, that's not them, and you can't hold it against them. You learn about redirecting people, like with dementia. Alzheimer's and dementia I get calls probably one to two times a day for memory care. There's this lady that she walks up and down the hallway every single day. She's just mumbling. You don't know what she's saying, but you hold her hand and she knows, you know, it's like that connection she feels, and she will stop mumbling. She'll calm down and sit down with you. There's all sorts of things you can do to connect with them, even if they can't talk or if they can't walk, you know. Play music for them or give them hand massages or, you know, give them lotion all over their body, you know. Make them feel good, smell good. You know, there's a lot of dementia patients that even though they can't talk or walk and you do stuff, you get reactions out of them still.
Something that's important, maybe you're even looking for yourself. If you're looking for yourself or you're looking for somebody else, a family member, somebody you're in charge of, a guardian, for a nursing facility, as the caller said, that's a good one.
Yep.
What do you look for?
So number one, when you walk in, you know, that main entrance, how do you feel? How does it make you feel? How are you greeted? That's a big thing. I don't set up tours. If they want to set up a tour, they can, but I always say I'm here 7:30 to 4:30 every day. You come in anytime, because, you know, I don't feel like you should set up a tour, because it's like, you can only come at 2:00. Well, why? Are all your residents sleeping? You know, you want to be able to go into that facility anytime you want to see how it's ran. Not so everyone's scurrying around and saying, hey, she's got a tour today. So obviously, like, I always look to see, you know, I would look and say, are they making me come in at a certain time? You know, maybe they have a busy schedule that day, and I understand. But if they're adamant about a certain time, that should be a red flag. Obviously, like, I have a meeting every day, so if they can't come between 9 and 9:30, if they want to, they can. Our receptionist will give them a tour, but, you know. Do they have a brochure? Is everything listed in that brochure? You know, what kind of TV they have, meals, menu, different menu options, activities, the monthly agenda, the monthly food agenda, you know. You want that to be full of so much information that when you sit down and look at that, by the time you get ready for the tour, you don't have questions because it's all right there. How many doctors do you have in-house? What's another thing? Like, you know, insurances. They should be able to list off insurances, all about that when you're taking your tour. And then the big thing that is a big thing is, does it smell like urine?
You know, I was going to ask you about that because it's an indiscreet thing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But here's what I always wonder, to be honest with you, because I've visited people in nursing homes. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've known people who've been in nursing homes. And when you walk in, 90% of the time, that's the smell that hits you. But in my own brain, I think to myself, oh my goodness, there's 90% something people hear who can't go to the bathroom.
It should never smell like urine.
Really?
It should never, ever, ever smell like urine.
A lot of them do.
Yeah. It should never smell like urine. If it smells like urine, it's because they're sitting in their Depends too long.
Ish.
Yeah. That is one big compliment I get. And it's not for me. It's for aides. They're like, it doesn't smell like urine. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, why are you smelling so much? And I'm like, because I can't wait to tell them. It should never, you should never smell urine. That's, they soak the bed. The bed should be clean, you know. Would you let your, you know, does your child's room smell like urine when they're being potty trained, you know?
Well, now here's the question, though, because what I think is, down one of these halls.
Yeah.
Okay, now, two aides, I guess we would say, two aides have to check on a few people.
Yep.
Now, I think a lot of people in their own mind rationalize that's how it's different than a baby. That a baby has the parent, or even if they just have one parent, it's usually one baby, one parent.
Mm-hmm.
But here you've got two people and 20.
Yep.
That might, you might have to wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, they're supposed to be changed and checked every 2 hours, check and change every 2 hours. And that's something you have to get used to when you get into a nursing facility. Like, they might be doing their rounds and someone puts their call light on. They have to go answer that call light. You know, hey, what do you need? And they're like, I need to go to the bathroom. Okay, is it? Do you have to go right this second? Or can you wait so I can finish the person across the hall? That's something, you know, it's a, you got to think about it. Or that hall partner, because for us, we have hall partners, they'll be like, hey, I'm going to take her to the bathroom real quick. Can you do this person? That's only a one assist rather than the two assist, and then we'll jump back to the two assist. It's all has to do with time management.
When, how do you keep that from happening? Is it just really just time management?
Time management. And, you know, a lot, you have nurses that are on top of you. So, like, and again, it's different for all facilities. So, like, we have STNAs, nurses, unit managers, which manage that unit you're on. Then you have the ADON, then you have the DON, then you have the administrator. So it's like a Christmas tree of people. If you need help, don't hesitate to ask for help. You know, everybody jumps in and helps. But the big thing is time management. That's one thing you have to learn in this field. And it's for nurses too, passing meds, you know. When should I start my med pass to be able to get so-and-so her, to get her insulin, you know, before her meal, stuff like that.
You know, it's interesting when the caller called in, we talk about, you know, there are some facilities that aren't good.
Yep.
In any community you live in, usually has more than one facility in it like this.
Yep.
When that conversation happens with the social worker in the hospital, I've heard it 1,000 times, whether it's short or long-term care, you'll hear, oh, that is the worst one. She's not going there. That one's okay. That one. How, you know, not every employee is a great employee.
Yep.
When you get somebody who's bad, is there a reform? Can you deal with that, or do they just have to go?
They run a tight ship. They just have to go. For ours. I can't speak for
others.
Not
for everybody.
They are very, So an interesting fact is, our director of nursing, which is, you know, under the administrator, she's the head honcho for nursing. She was my grandma's STNA.
Oh.
Yeah. She's very strict. She's awesome. She's nice as can be, has the calmest, sweetest voice, but she's strict. You know, because you should never let anything slip, because every time you walk into that room, you're caring for someone's, first of all, loved one, but that's their health, but also you should be caring for them as you would care for your own grandparent. And that's a big thing. When my dad passed, you know, he was grouchy towards the end. And we've had a couple of people that are grouchy. And it's like, you can't let that affect you. You have to treat them as if it was your own mom or dad or your own grandparent. If you have a bad attitude, you don't belong here. Go somewhere, you know, else where they'll put up with that bad attitude. But that bad attitude is not only going to reflect on you, but it's going to wear off on your coworkers. But most importantly, that's going to wear off on the residents. That's going to make them feel like they're being a bother, you know.
If you're not, in your case, if you wake up in the morning and you're not feeling good, or you've had a cold,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you didn't sleep well the night before, or the kids kept you up, or you had an argument with somebody, How do you leave that?
You just have to. You just walk through those doors and you are a different person. Because it's going to take a toll on everybody. Everybody works as a team, so.
Now, does it come back as soon as you leave? Or are you able to work it through?
I mean, there's been times where I've woken up grouchy, you know, with my husband. I'm like, can you pack the lunch? And then he sleeps in, because we have to pack the boys' lunch every day. And I go home, and I'm normal again. He's like, you are sorry. Are you going to say sorry? And I'm like, sorry for what? And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, you just, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's people where they hold grudges, but.
You know, we all get older.
Yeah.
Every one of us is getting older every moment of time. In your own life, would you end up in a place like this? Would you feel comfortable knowing one day that, hey, I might be on the other end of this situation?
You know, yeah. And that's what I tell people, is that karma's going to get you one way or the other. So you better treat them right, because you might end up in here one day. And I have dark humor. I make jokes all the time. I'm like, I'm going to end up with dementia like my grandma, because it skips a generation and I just have bad luck. And people are like, Catherine, don't say that. And I'm like, no, like, I'm serious. You have to prepare for, you know, I don't live in the moment. I live in the moment, but I still prepare for what's next. You know, and I might be in the same room she was in, you know, at Country View. You just never know what's going to happen. So it's like, always treat them how you would want treated. It's easy.
It's easy, but why is that hard for people? Because clearly it is for a lot of people.
I don't know.
I mean, I would say that even people working in the hospital, they don't treat you, there's no way they're treating you like they would want to be treated.
Yeah, I've seen it before. I'm not going to lie to you. I've seen it before. And it drives me nuts, like to the point where I could just throw them out. I don't know why people choose to work in healthcare when they're like that. I don't know if they're going to take it out on those residents. I don't know.
Do you think working in healthcare, because that is it's different than going to a bakery or a restaurant.
Yeah.
You're dealing with life and death and people's well-being every day. And that is, I think, more pressure than is the burger cooked correctly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stress. How do you deal with that?
You don't. I don't know. I don't know how you deal with it. A lot of people, like, a lot of people smoke cigarettes or they drink. I don't know how. I can't deal with it. I'm terrible at dealing with stress. I went to the doctor's the other day and got my blood drawn, and she was trying to take my blood pressure, and it was like 250, and she was like, you're going to have heart. I said, no. I said, I'm stressed, but not that stressed. You don't even have it on properly, you know? I don't know. Stress, you know, stress management is something people in healthcare don't know how to manage. I do know, like, people who are in the police field or even, you know, firefighters or paramedics, they have to go to counseling. And I think that would be something that nurses would benefit from, especially working at the hospitals. But, that's a good question, because not a lot of people know how to cope with stress.
Well, it becomes a very interesting thing, because do you think that people who work in the medical field even realize that they are bringing it home?
Yeah, no, they don't. I can tell you right now, my husband, if he was listening, he'd call and be like, she brings stress home all the time, and I don't realize I'm bringing it home.
Yeah. And why do you think that is? Why do you think there's a disconnect?
I think it's just because you're caring for people all day long, and so it's still on your mind, and it's not something you can just leave at the door. Like, oh, you know, I missed this phone call today. I'll call him back tomorrow. But when I leave, I'm like, so-and-so's being put on hospice. I have this admission coming tonight. I need to upload the discharge summary for the nurses, so they're not getting not only admit during MedPass, but more paperwork when they could have put stuff in before their med pass, you know. It's hard to level that out, I guess I would say.
It's just interesting, because I've known a lot of people who work in the medical field, and I don't want to stereotype anybody, but I have noticed that a lot of those people seem to be more stressed.
Yeah.
They seem to have illnesses that are related to stress a lot more. But if you ask them about it, they will not say that that's what it's related to.
Yeah.
Because obviously, as a person who's never worked in medicals, I would say, well, did you think it's your job?
And yeah.
It's me, no.
Because they love their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's been times where my husband's like, you are so stressed out. And I'm like, it is not that. That's not what's stressing me out. And he's like, then what is it? And I have nothing to say.
Exactly.
And he's like, so what's stressing you out? And I'm like, okay, you know. But there's, you can't talk about it. You can't talk about their, you know, what's going on. You can say so-and-so, you know, you can't say their name. So-and-so is being discharged from the, you know. Yeah, they're never going to admit that because nurses, kudos to them. I don't know how nurses do it because they are like, I don't even know. They're like Superman times 20. They are a different breed. So I don't know how nurses, they love their job, but I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how they do the 12-hour shifts.
See, when I worked as an STNA, I loved 12-hour shifts. I said I'd never take a job where it wasn't 12-hour shifts. But it takes a toll on your body. You know, you get the 4 days off. But in today's world, you see nurses or hear that they're working like 6-12s at hospitals because they're so short-staffed.
Well, that's what we're, in my own mind, not being a medical person, I say to myself, I don't want to catch that nurse on hour number 11 of a rough day.
Yeah.
You know, when she's trying to put an IV in or something. Yeah. You know, that's not where you want to be.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know. Thankfully, I've never been in that position. So I don't know, you know. I went to the hospital the other day to visit one of our residents, and they told me she was in ICU. So, you know, I went to where the ICU was at, and there was no one in the ICU. And I was like, okay, did all these patients die? Where'd they all go? They had that whole wing of that ICU shut down because there wasn't enough staff. And then so this nurse, she was like, you're in the wrong. I said, yeah, like take me to wherever, you know, who so-and-so's at. And they all looked, and I said, you know, why is this, I've never seen this part of the ICU shut down. She goes, we don't have enough staff. There's people waiting outside of the emergency room that you could tell was sick because it was so busy and not enough staff. And those nurses looked like they, I mean, had just been through it. There's bags under their eyes. Their hair was messy. You know, I was just like, they are swamped.
Well, we just got the call earlier.
Yeah.
The woman who said she was ill the day after Christmas and went to urgent care, 7-hour wait.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the hospital.
We've had residents where they've not only gone to one hospital. You know, we're taking so and so to this hospital. Then we get a call that she's at a different hospital. It's because that hospital was fully packed. You know, it's crazy.
You know, it's an interesting time right now for you to be in this position, because what I think about when that lady called in about the 7-hour wait is that, you know, you're in it during the pandemic era.
Yeah.
And the things that we have all heard during this pandemic era have been compromised immune system, mm-hmm. which if you're in a nursing facility, I would imagine something's going on, and elderly, which obviously is a big population in the nurse. So, you know, we are getting a little better with the COVID now, but this year we got a 7-hour wait, and I'm being told that's because the flu is so horrible.
Pneumonia.
Enough to where you would go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Normally people don't go to the hospital for the flu.
Yeah. Upper respiratory infections have been like the number one thing.
So how do you keep that? I mean, you know, if you don't feel well, do you go to work in a nursing facility? How can you possibly keep a handle on that?
I mean, if they don't feel good, we advise them to stay home.
But family members can come in who are not well.
So we do like screen-ins. So they have to, again, they can lie, you know, it's happened. And then their loved one gets sick and we're just like, are you kidding me right now? Because then you have to isolate them to make sure it doesn't spread. Because one gets the flu, they could all, 92 of them, get the flu. So it's hard because they want to see their loved ones, but we're like, you know, you're putting their lives in jeopardy. Their health is 10 times worse than yours is. So why are you trying to risk it?
Why do you think? I mean, certainly they're not doing it intentionally.
We don't know. There's no rhyme or reason for it. They're just doing their normal visiting. And we're like, the loved one's not going to, you know, they're going to understand that you're sick. Or, you know, they might not even realize that you didn't come Wednesday. don't be that person that gets your loved one sick and then you regret it.
Now, we all know what a hospital is, and we all know sometimes what a nursing facility is. Now, what are the big differences? For people, let's say you're totally that person who breaks their leg,
yeah.
who lives alone. I have to go there for rehabilitation mm-hmm. for a month.
Yeah.
Okay, what's going to be the difference of me sitting in the hospital right now and me sitting there for a month?
So, hospitals, obviously, they can perform surgeries. They can mess around with their meds. We can do IVs, but we can't do all of the IVs. We can't do x-rays in-house. We can do ultrasounds in-house. Not to an extent, though. Nursing facilities are a lot smaller than hospitals. When you come there for rehab, you know, I go over, they can do wound care. We can do wound care. We can do IVs. There's some, and again, I'm not a nurse, so there's some IVs we can't do. Some we can. Some meds, you have to have a nurse, an RN, a registered nurse 24 hours. We're not always, we have an RN every day, but not 24 hours. So you can't, you know, be on one type of medicine that has to have a registered nurse. And it's only because they took one other class for this certain med. It drives me nuts. But we do therapy 5 days a week. You know, the big main things is just like surgery and diagnosing that problem. Again, you know, people come to us for long-term care and their family member didn't realize they had dementia and our doctor diagnosed it. Hospitals just have a lot more flexibility than nursing facilities do.
Now, the doctors at nursing facilities, are you able to keep your own doctor if you end up in a nursing facility?
Not family doctors. We, you know, because with insurances, they're not going to want you going to two different family doctors. It's easier to have the doctor that we have because our nurses can, we have two of them. So, like, I think it's like every other week, you know, one's on call, one's off call. They can call them any time of the day and get an answer for them. So it's just easier because they see them. One of our doctors is there Monday and Friday, and then the other one is, he works too much. He'll come in like 2 days during the week, one day during the weekend. You just never know with him. So you're going to see our primary care physicians a lot more than you would see your one outside of the nursing facility. So
when it's all going on and somebody's there short term, are their attitudes pretty good?
No.
Yeah, I'm
not at first
tough.
Because and not all the time. I can't say that. Who wants to be in the hospital, for one? You're going to get depressed being in the hospital. They're waking you up all hours of the night. They're poking you here and there. You're not getting the care you should be getting because they're short-staffed. So when they get to us, they're all bruised up from being poked everywhere and their IVs. They're tired. They're worn out. The hospital bed wasn't comfy. Ours isn't that much comfier either because we have hospital beds, too. Nothing's going to be comfy like your bed. We have recliners, though. They love the recliners. At first they're in a lot of pain, you know, because hospitals, they give you tons of pain meds, but you can't be on those the whole time. So you're pretty much coming off all those crazy pain meds when you get to us, and you're maybe on, like, a high dose of Tylenol, or I don't even know what the pain meds are called, you know. What is it? It starts with an O. I can't even think of what it's called. Anyhow, you
opioids?
Yeah, there's one pain med that it's like the hospitals always pass out. And it's like they were giving you four at the hospital, and then they drop you down to one. But they don't tell you. It's only in the discharge paperwork. So then they're like, where's this pain med? And it's like they didn't send you with that pain med, you know. So they're in a lot of pain. And then the hospital, they do a little bit of therapy, but not a lot because they have to evaluate all of the patients that they're always getting. So when they get to us, they're really like in therapy boot camp. You know, we want them to get back to normal. We don't want them to stay long term unless they have to because we don't have any beds available, you know. We don't, you know, they think, is my family leaving me here, you know. You never know what's going through their head. Am I not going to get better? Once they start realizing that they're going to bounce back, their attitudes change.
Is there a problem with depression in people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like the number one thing, depression. And, like, for the caller that, you know, said people get neglect, like, I encourage her to go be an advocate for someone who can't talk or walk. Go sit with them. Go sing to them. You can't sing? Okay, go read to them, you know. Go give them a teddy bear that they can, you know, their hands are contracted, but they can grip that teddy bear. That's what my biggest thing is. I want people that don't have anything to do with nursing homes to get involved. You know, try to change someone's day. Make it, you know, try to brighten their day. Bring them flowers. Bring them cards. It doesn't take long to bake cookies. You know, drop off 60 cookies to the receptionist and have her pass them out to the residents. You know, it's not hard.
How do you convince somebody? Let's say you know somebody and they're taking care of somebody who you feel clearly should be in a facility. You see it's wearing down that person. Yep. The person who needs the care is not getting it because of the situation. But it's one of those, I will never send this person to a nursing home. They feel it's their duty. How do you get in there and convince?
So a lot of times people have reached out to me and they're like, you know, I see you post all the time. Or do you work at a nursing, you know, home? And I'm like, yeah, look us up on Facebook. That's the first step is, you know, just go take a tour. It's not the end of the world to just go get a free tour. You might end up getting a pen and a notepad or chapstick, you know. I don't know. I think a lot of the talks is, you know, this is going to affect your health in the end. Their health's already bad. So why are you letting it affect your health on top of theirs? Because not only they need help, you're going to end up needing help too. You're going to end up having a heart attack or a broken back or just generalized weakness. And a lot of people, their eyes open up. Or they, again, that respite stay I was talking about, they agree to do respite stays and then they end up staying.
You know, we all are born, we all live a life, and in the end, we're all going to depart. We just don't know when.
Yeah.
Has this taught you anything about life in general that maybe you did not realize or think about prior to this?
Oh, yeah. It's really opened my eyes. There's always people that need taken care of. I've seen tons of family members where they just leave them, and they don't come back for months at a time. And when they do, they act like nothing's changed. And it's like, where have you been? You know, it's sad. It's very sad. And that's why I encourage people to get out. And instead of saying, you know, nursing homes are horrible, take care of your loved ones, then go visit someone. You know, go give them company. Go make a friend. Because a lot of them, they need friends. And it's sad because they're like, or they tell their loved ones, you know, I know, like, I'm a bother. You don't have to visit me. And they don't. And it's, like, frustrating because it's like they just don't want to be a bother. Don't make them feel like a bother. Go see them.
You said in the first hour something interesting that people don't talk about hospice. They don't talk about death.
Yeah.
These are taboo subjects in society. They don't talk about them, so they become very difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
Because people don't talk about them.
Yeah.
Have you learned anything about death from working in this facility? Which is, I think, still it's either number one or number two fear that people have.
Yeah. I love death. So
you love death.
Yeah. So I can't say that I've always been intrigued with funeral homes, and so has Aunt Angie.
Well, I'll tell you, I love death. I've never heard that before, but that's good.
It's not a bad thing, though. I like it in a way of being able to, I've always been intrigued with it. So, like, I've talked to Clay that owns Snyder's Funeral Homes. He owns the Delaware location. It's not, I like seeing people die. It's that seeing them be able to be peaceful. I shouldn't say I love death. How do I say it? I like planning, like, funerals or getting, we have a guy, he's on hospice. I brought in a church for him because, you know, I like fulfilling their wishes. And then, like, being able to be like, hey, like, I was able to do something for them before they passed, you know? But I like, planning funerals. I think that'd be so fun to plan funerals because you want to be there for the families, and I like to talk to families. I feel like I'd go beyond, however you say that, for the family, you know, planning that funeral, making it be as best as possible.
Should people fear it?
No. I don't. So I was in a car accident when I was 18. I was a senior in high school. I got hit head on by, I think, I don't even know, honestly. Uncle Tim never even messed with it. If she was on something or prior to being on something, we don't know. She hit me like head on 60 miles an hour. And I wanted to go home that night. And from the hospital, they took me to Grant because my stomach was so bruised. They said, something's going on. Passed the CAT scan, and the nurse was like, no, I'm not letting you go, yada, yada, yada. Well, my intestines was leaking toxins all throughout my body. Mm. you know, I was only 18, my mom's watching me, and I could feel my body shake, but, you know, I was close to death at that time. I didn't black out or anything, but it's like, I don't think people should be afraid of death. I think it's something that needs to be talked about. People don't want to talk about it. Like, pre-planning funerals, you know, talk about it. Go do it.
Yeah, I think the fear is twofold. I think, number one, I'm not going to be here. Yeah. I think it's hard for somebody to wrap their mind around the idea.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I always tell people, I don't think, and me included, I don't think we ever really, we can say we know we're going to die.
Yeah.
You know, you can be dying in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But I think in your own mind, you never really will ever wrap your mind around the idea that you will not be here.
Yeah.
How can you not be here? It just doesn't make any sense.
It is what it is. You know you're going, you know, if you're a believer, you know you're going home. Yeah, it's weird. It's
well, I weird. Think the other thing is the fear of pain.
Yeah.
Is it going to hurt? Nobody wants to be
in
any
kind
of pain.
Yeah. It's a hard question to, you know, I encourage people. So I used to be on TikTok, and all my TikTok was filled with funeral directors. And I, oh my gosh, all the things. Like when we were sitting there and with my dad and his everything. And I was like, well, I watched so-and-so on TikTok. And she was like, oh, you know, oh, Gracie, you know exactly what's going to happen. And it's like, yeah, you know. But it's, you know, everyone's going to go through it. So why not just learn as much as you can to ease your mind? Obviously, not everyone's going to have the best death. That's a given. But I encourage people to learn about death. Learn how the body works.
You know, and in the end, I think something that is comforting, whether you are a believer or a non-believer, because there are non-believers, is that if you believe you're going somewhere, great.
Yeah.
And if you go there, great.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're not going to know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how bad can that be?
Yeah. I went and saw a medium, and my dad, heck no. Never, ever, ever would he believe in stuff like that. My grandma was not happy with me. Because I'm just so curious about it. The whole thing just makes me curious.
Well, isn't that in our last few minutes? This is fascinating. We'll have to have you back because this is a very interesting conversation on a lot of levels. But isn't it, I mean, as I say, we all have a problem with death our own, you know, for pain and what happens. But also, when somebody else goes, that is incredibly painful for people. And it's also, and I don't think people understand that. When they say, you know, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but I'm not ready for you to go.
How can you accept it?
Yeah. How do you accept that they're ready to, that you're not going to see them?
Yeah. Because
you got to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to deal with life without them, and that's tough.
Yeah. That's when you hear your residents say, you know, they're ready, but they're not going to tell their kids that.
Well, how many times do we hear of the husband dying, and then the wife dies a week later?
Yep.
I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing. So I guess the thing I'm saying is when you have these patients, you know, who, residents who become friendly and maybe have been there for a while, not only with the staff, but with the other residents.
Oh, it destroys everybody.
Yeah, how do you fix that?
You don't. You have to. It's quiet for a couple of days.
I bet.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you could give somebody in regard to skilled nursing facilities?
Never trust what people say. Go in, and you don't even have to be looking for one. Just go in and take a tour. Go in and volunteer. Go in and, you know, you're a singer. Be like, hey, can I sing a song for someone? What can I do to help you guys out? There's always something you can do for these people that are in skilled nursing facilities and long-term care.
Well, this 2 hours has blown by. It's been fantastic having you here, and we're definitely going to have you back. Because it's a subject that is tough to talk about, but maybe should be talked about in public more often. So the guest today has been Catherine Davidson, and she is an employee of a skilled nursing facility. And, you know, just look around, see what's going on, inform yourself before you make these decisions.
Yep. Assumptions.
Yeah, assumptions about these places that you might end up or somebody you care about might end up in. But it's been great having you. And by the way, we're done for the day here, but check us out on the website, wwgh1071.com. Download the free TuneIn app. You can listen anywhere in the world, absolutely free. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
I have had a real gripe against the legal system. to the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, legendary actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them.